SpursCast, episode 569. My name is Paul Garcia, and I am your host here on the SpursCast. Today, I'll be speaking with Project Spurs founder Michael DeLeon about the Spurs' play in their last three games. We'll look ahead to the approaching NBA trade deadline coming next week, and we'll share some of our memories about NBA legend Kobe Bryant after he tragically died over the weekend, along with eight others, including his daughter. Let's get this episode started. Mike, how are you doing today?
Doing all right. You know, there's a lot weighing on me right now because obviously kind of what you alluded to, we'll talk about that a little more in depth later on. But as far as everything else, they're going to looking forward to All-Star break coming up and kind of now it's like full week's break from all of this. So it's not like craziness every other day or whatever. So doing good.
Yeah, Mike, you know, one of the things about being in media that I guess like I you don't have to deal with it when you're like an average fan is like, you know, going through like some heavy times like this, like, you know, obviously the whole basketball world is shaking up, just the whole world. I mean, Kobe touched a lot of people. It didn't matter if you were a basketball fan or not. You see that with all the professional athletes, celebrities that are coming out, just even average people that he did things for that weren't reported a lot to the media. So it's really tough to like, you know, just get back into it and really talk about things like, you know, just like kind of have to go about with your business. But unfortunately, the games do go on. The roster movement does have to happen, those kind of things. So it is unfortunate. You know, it's really tough to actually, you know, try to get back into that mode of thinking about basketball and doing a part of our job. What we're here to do is talk about basketball. But when, you know, this is really, really still like a huge thing right now that a lot of everybody's going through, including ourselves. So, you know, SpursCast listeners, I know that it's probably been a tough week for you all. You know, you guys were Spurs fans, but you also, you know, probably rooted for Kobe, rooted against him in his prime against the Spurs. He was definitely a huge rival against San Antonio with all the Spurs Lakers years. So toward the end of this episode, me and Mike, you know, we're going to first tackle the Spurs business at hand and, you know, go through how they're playing and those kind of things. And then we're going to obviously spend some time discussing Kobe and kind of the memory that he's left us with, both as fans and also in the media game. So let's first begin though, Mike, with the team and how they're playing. You know, a week ago I had Colin Reed on here and they were playing really well. You know, we were talking about how they were winning some games. They had been playing very well. Well, since then they've lost three games in a row. They're 0-3 in the last three games since I last recorded. So the first loss comes against the Suns, where they were favored in that game. They fall behind by 15, but barely lose by 4 at home against Phoenix. Then on Sunday, that was the day, obviously. I think this one's like pretty much like almost like excusable for everyone, whether you win or lose on Sunday, because that was the day that Kobe tragically passed away. And, you know, you could just tell, I mean, the players, you know, it was tough to make the players, the coaches have to be part of this game. I mean, it was really rough. And I'm really glad that the NBA let the Lakers postpone that game against the Clippers coming up this week. I think that was a really good move by them. And it was just tough. You know, I really wish those games were kind of excluded, because it was just tough on the players and the coaching and even the fans to have to go through that kind of environment when a huge influence on all of their lives was had just tragically passed away. So the Spurs did lose, unfortunately, to the Toronto Raptors that day at home by 4 points, actually, even though they were fell behind by 19. But like I said, you know, you could just tell there wasn't, you know, that competitive spirit by both teams, because again, it was just a really tough night. Then the Spurs had a back-to-back in Chicago on Monday, and they ended up losing this game to the Bulls by 1 point when they actually had an 11-point lead and they were actually favored in that game. So they're 0-3 right now in their last three games. Mike, what have you seen in those last three games? You know, kind of like excluding the Raptors game, I would just say, just right, because of the environment.
Yeah.
So I guess against the Suns and the Bulls, what did you see?
Paul might be some bad luck, I'm not sure, but every game since he came on, they've lost. But yeah, I mean, it's really hard to break down anything with that Raptors game just because there's so many other things going on. That's why when it was going on, it was just like, you know, it's kind of even hard to like try to analyze that anyway, because there's just going on beyond outside their control. I mean, the Suns game, the Suns are an improved team this year, and you know, them getting mm-hmm. Ricky Rubio, and I think I feel like Kelly Oubre and Devin Booker together have found some sort of some chemistry, and they work well together. So that's not like that easily out anymore. And now that they're coached by Monty, it's like that's going to be a tough game no matter what. There was just a lot of inconsistencies I saw in that game, and it's kind of been one of the things that we've seen over the course of the season, is that you don't there's it's where I guess back in the day, obviously, when you have a team that's led by Tim Duncan and Chin Manu and Tony Parker, you kind of know what to expect on a nightly basis. Now you really don't know, like, if Marcus is going to have, like, a monster game or just okay, or, you know, DeMar can have a great game or have, you know, it just it's just a little different. So you don't really know, you know, exactly what you're getting. Obviously, that depends on, you know, whoever's defending them. The Bulls game was one of those things where a friend of mine, he's telling us that called the third quarter collapse, and the Spurs are kind of like the new fourth quarter collapse, it seems like. And actually, mm-hmm. it was the first and fourth quarters, I believe. This one might have been like just the fourth. And I think they when Chicago made that rally, they just started struggling. And then the missed free throws will do, you know what I mean? I think they're just the final number, it was like 23 of 34. And I know that DeMar and Jakob was actually missed a lot of free throws. And so that kind of hurt them. So it's just things like that that we see a lot this year, free throws, things that you expect that, you know, won't be an issue. And those end up hurting in the end when it's a 1-point loss. So it's just been a lot of that, basically. It just seems like inconsistency and not executing down the stretch.
Yeah, and this is kind of something me and Colin talked about a week ago, was the fact that, you know, I know they were winning a lot of those games in the last, you know, those five that we had covered, but they were barely winning a lot of those games. And really, it's almost like, you know, the Spurs right now could have be like, you know, almost like on an 8-game winning streak at this time, just because if things go in their way, then all of a sudden they're winning all these games. Or they could be on an 8-game losing streak right now, and we see them on a 3-game losing streak. Because again, I mean, they're so inconsistent. That's kind of what Pop said after the game against the Bulls, was that they just cannot put a full game together. So they're always in it, but then they're always like behind. You know, it's just tough to count on them each night on what they're going to do. And obviously, my big belief is in the defense, and there really hasn't been an upgrade there at all, like in any kind of improvement. They're kind of just staying there in the low 20s and most of their stats, specifically in their ranking. So that's kind of what you see. And then even things that like they're good at haunt them in the worst of times, like the free throw shooting. Mike, you just mentioned they're a pretty good free throw shooting team, and all of a sudden, you know, Jim Boylan goes to hack a Jakob strategy there at the end, because LaMarcus Aldridge was out of that game, so Jakob kind of had to close. And then of course we saw DeRozan miss the game tying free throw that could have sent them to overtime. And then also like offensive boards for the opponent. San Antonio is a really good rebounding team. They keep teams off the glass, but lately in crunch time, you know, in the last 2 or 3 minutes of a game, teams have been getting offensive boards. Now, I know that's part lineup, because Pop's playing a little bit smaller with more guards out there, but still, you know, you still got to get those extra boards and close the possessions. And they've had some issues there in the fourth quarter, late in games, getting those stops. So it's really kind of, I mean, when you look at the Spurs now, they are 20-26 as of Tuesday night that you and I are recording this, Mike. They're ninth out west. They're kind of just still right there on being right behind the Grizzlies for the eighth spot out west. They're just two games behind Memphis on this night that we're recording. You know, what happened, though, was that they just lost all that momentum. They had won 3 games in a row, which got them to 20-23, which is 3 games below 500, which was making progress to getting back to 500. And then, boom, they're right, losing 3 in a row now. They're back to where they were on January 17th, which was 11 days ago. So it's almost like they made no progress, really, from one of their lowest points at the season, being 6 games below 500. So now, Mike, we're going to kind of transition toward our second topic, which is the trade deadline approaching. You know, back when Brett Brown had barely gotten hired by Philly and he had left the Spurs, it was back in 2014. He had an interesting quote where he discussed he let out a little bit of how the Spurs evaluate their team. And he mentioned two specific timelines that they would always use and look at. He mentioned before Christmas and then after Christmas to the All-Star break was when they wanted to make their push. Now, normally, you know, the Spurs might struggle sometimes before Christmas, but at least, you know, from after Christmas to the All-Star break, they kind of get it together and they start picking up steam and heading into the All-Star break pretty strong. We even saw that, I think, a little bit from last year's team. This year, though, I mean, they're really struggling. Before the All-Star break, they were 12-17. And then right now that you and I are recording this, from after Christmas to today, they are 8-9. So they're still kind of below 500 with their play, even though it looks good at times when they beat some of these teams like Milwaukee, like Toronto, the Boston. There you go. So it's like, you know, they're basically 8-9. They really haven't made a lot of progress when they're actually evaluating their team. And I know that the trade deadline is approaching next Thursday, February 6th. So let's kind of go into here, Mike, in this area of the trade deadline. So we're gonna play a little game here. I've written down everybody by on the roster, and I want to just discuss each player, kind of where their contract stands. And then I'm gonna ask you, Mike. I made like a little rating scale. And I'm going to ask you, and I'll give you the grades about how it works. First, I do want to spend some time on one specific player, and that's Damari Carroll. So Damari Carroll, he signed a 3-year deal over the summer where he's making $7 million this year, 6.65 next year, and then in the final year, $7 million, but only 1.35 is guaranteed. Now, I wrote a piece recently over the weekend over Damari because I've been getting that question a lot of, because like we're at the point now where he's not even active anymore. He's literally sitting, when he's healthy, he's sitting in a suit on game days. So it looks like he's just not in their future plans for right now, with this current team. And in that piece that I had written that, you know, I think the only way, I think one of the key ways that he gets moved is through a trade exception where a team absorbs him into their trade exception. And there was only three teams that I could find that had enough money to do that. And that would be the Dallas Mavericks, the Oklahoma City Thunder, and Portland Trailblazers. So Mike, I guess my question to you is, what do you think about Damari? And then we'll get into the grading system of whether or not we think he's going to get traded. What do you think about his situation right now?
Yeah, it's been one of the things that's been kind of puzzling this season. A lot of people ask about it. And I'm just like, I have no idea. And they're like, why did they sign him to 3 years? And I think when they signed him, obviously, whatever has happened didn't transpire until after he was signed. And I don't know if it's just, it could be something as simple as he doesn't fit in a rotation. They feel more comfortable with the players they have. Or it could be an injury. Or it could be any number of things. So it's kind of hard because no matter what you talk about, it's going to be speculation. And so you can't really base much off of facts. But, yeah, I mean, I read that piece that you wrote, and people would ask me as well. But, again, that's not something – if one, it's not an expiring contract, so mm-hmm. that's not going to be very – it's not going to be something that a lot of teams are going to be looking at, especially if it's a brand-new contract. And, you know, it's quite right up there. And the teams you mentioned, you know, that's another thing that's going to be – it's got to be the kind of right fit. And I thought maybe the right fit would have been something like, you know, it would have to be a team that, you know, he's got experience playing for before or under a coach, like maybe Bud that he's played for before. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, it's been kind of the big mystery of this season is what exactly is going on there. But yeah, I mean, I have a feeling, you know, that I'm sure some calls will be made, but I don't know what's going to happen to the deadline.
Yeah. And one thing I wrote there in that piece was that, you know, I just don't see the buyout being an option because, again, he's only, like you mentioned, Mike, he's only in year one of three. Unless he's giving a lot of money back, then I just don't see the buyout being an option. Just because, like I said, his impact on the Spurs' cap sheet would not only affect this season, but it'd affect next season and then also the following season with that money that he's giving back, even though there's still some that he'd get paid guaranteed. It would really affect their cap sheet. I just don't see why they would do that when it's not a huge move. And then also, you know, wanting to have to stretch that contract out. So again, we'll see what kind of happens to Damari, you know, as time goes on, especially with next week's trade deadline approaching. And you know, they could do another trade of like trying to find players with similar salaries. Now, I didn't want to dive into every single team and look at that because that's really tough to do. But that's why I just brought up Dallas, OKC, and Portland. Now, I don't think, you know, I'm not reporting or I don't think that those three teams are even going to take him. But I'm just saying those would probably be the easiest financially to just fit him into a what we call a trade exception out in the NBA. So now, Mike, let's kind of play this little game that I've created here. I have three ratings here. Okay, so a one grade means that if this player got traded, you would be shocked. You would be absolutely – you think that this player right now is extremely safe. You would be so surprised or shocked if this player got moved by next week. A two means it's understandable that the Spurs made this move. They had to move this player or they, you know, that deal was out there and they had to just grab it and take it and execute that trade because it's pretty understandable from where the team stands into the future and also with the player. And then three is – you totally expect this. You kind of see this coming already way ahead of time. It definitely wouldn't surprise you if a player got moved. Okay. So again, one is player is extremely safe. Two is understandable. And then three is like, yeah, I kind of expect, I really expected that. All right. So let's start off with Carroll, so who we just mentioned. What would you give his grade of him getting moved by next week? Would you give it a one, two, or a three?
Honestly, kind of somewhere between a one and a two because I can see obviously something's not working or whatever, but at the same time, I'd be a little bit surprised just because I think it would take something. They really have to figure something out to be able to move him at this point, and they have to find a willing trade partner, and then you'd have to find if they can find a player at that salary. Usually, players with that kind of salary are not sitting on the bench, so then finding equal value. It's going to be tough. So, yeah, you know, basically, it's more between a one and a two, but towards a two more.
Okay, I picked it too also, just because, again, the situation, it would just, it's so understandable that, you know, he's not playing, he wants to play, he's toward the end of his career. Colin mentioned this last week, I believe. So I understand why it would make sense to move him, but again, I think the number is the issue, and there's just not a lot of teams, all the playoff teams that could use a competitive wing like Damari, they're capped out, all of them. Like, there's just not a lot of opportunities to bring him at that number, like you mentioned, Mike. For a veteran, you know, coming off the bench, you would expect him to be paid like 2 to 4 or 5 million, but now Damari's getting 7 million. That's the number they got to try to work with. So that's why I pick a two as well, where it's understandable, but again, I just think the financial roller coaster that it would take to get him moved is the issue in the way. Now, Mike, let's look at three players who have a choice of leaving this summer. They are DeMar DeRozan, because again, he has a player option coming up this summer. He can become an unrestricted free agent at 27.7 million. Marco Bellinelli is an unrestricted free agent. And then Jakob Poeltl, he kind of has some choice here, where he's a restricted free agent, so the Spurs can kind of still have a chance at retaining him by offering a qualifying offer. And the last player is Bryn Forbes, who's an unrestricted free agent this coming summer. So these are kind of the guys on expiring contracts in a way. Let's first begin with DeMar. What is your grade for him? 1, 2, or 3?
Probably a 1 at this point. I feel like there's a lot of trade talks about him, and I think ever since then he seems to have played a lot better, and I feel like Spurs, like coaches in front of us, have a different set of expectations for him than fans do.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like he's done just about everything they probably asked for. So yeah, I'd be shocked if he was moved at this point.
Okay, I went with the 2 here, and again, I think I'm more leaning toward 1, but just because of the circumstances. Like, again, normally the Spurs don't move their go to players, but again, because of the situation where he can literally walk this summer. If they don't agree to an extension, or if he doesn't opt into his contract, and if he wants to explore the market with them, they could just lose him for no kind of assets as well. That's the only reason why. But I think, Mike, I'm like you. I think that especially, next week he could literally be named an All-Star next Thursday if coaches vote him in as a reserve. So there's also that chance. I just, you know, it's really tough to read right now, but because of the circumstances, I would just say with this contract, I'm pushing him up to a 2. But I think he's really, you know, I think he's going to be safe in the end. I don't think they're going to move him, especially because he's one of their better chances of getting to the playoffs this season. Let's look at Marco Bellinelli. What do you give his grade?
This one's tough to read because, I mean, I'm going to say 2.
Oh, okay.
But it's tough to read because he still continues to get a lot of minutes out there. Mm-hmm. He still gets to, especially in like important situations, it seems like he is still out there playing. So I think that there's something I'm not seeing, but so I can see where it'd be understandable, but you know, he might have more security than I think that I see.
Okay, I'm with you. I gave him a 2 as well. You know, in the event that the coaching staff, you know, because he could walk this summer, like we mentioned, he knows, you know, Lonnie's basically coming in for that role eventually in the future, and you know, Lonnie's pretty much earned it at this point. But if the event that the coaching staff wants to just kind of give Lonnie that freedom of like not having to worry about his minutes getting taken by Marco if he starts struggling, maybe they want to do that. So maybe, and also, you know, playoff teams I think would want Marco because of his shooting. There's a lot of teams out there that are lacking shooting that would really like Bellinelli as an option off the bench. I think that's why I put him as a 2. It would be understandable if he got moved. Let's look at Jakob Poeltl. What do you think about him?
Oh man, I'd be shocked if he was moved at this point, because I feel like he's taken. I mean, just the difference between last year and this year, we're starting to see where he's finally starting to become comfortable. When he's in there, he has a big impact. And I mean, just coming in for LaMarcus last night and producing the way he did, and yeah, he missed free throws, whatever. But obviously, that's going to happen when they target you. But yeah, so I'd probably put him at 1.
I'm there too with you. I think Jakob's pretty safe. You know, he's done a great job. I think that the Spurs want to definitely try to retain him by matching whatever offer sheet he gets this summer, as long as it's not too much. So I think that he's pretty safe here. I would be shocked as well if he got moved. What about Bryn Forbes?
Yeah, Bryn Forbes throws me. And I think I'm probably in a different camp than most people. But, I mean, I would probably say that's a 1 also, because the man's making like 2.4 or 2.8 million, something like
that. Yeah, 2.8 this year.
And it's like, I know he's getting more minutes than everybody wants him to have, but that's outside of his control. And it's kind of one of those things where I tell people all the time, shooting is not really an effort thing. They're either going to go in or they're not, and every player has slumps. And, yeah, he's not playing on defense, but he never has been, so why would you expect that to change at all? So I mean, I think Pop is more than happy with what he's getting, especially with what he's getting paid.
Yeah, I'm with you there. I'm on Forbes. I'm a one. I don't see him getting moved at all. I don't see him being in conversations because I also think that like Forbes ends up being like on another team. I don't think he's a starter. I think he's more of a backup option for them. He's a reserve. I don't see, you know, especially because of the defensive issues. I don't think that other teams would start him, whereas the Spurs see him a little bit more valuable because of their lack of spacing in the starting five for their specific team. Okay, now, Mike, let's move on to two players where it's not going to be their call this coming summer, where they can end up becoming non-guaranteed players if the Spurs you know, don't guarantee their deal for next year. Let's start off first with Trey Lyles. What do you think about him?
And I'm still dumbfounded about Trey Lyles, man. I'm probably between a one and a two there. He's still starting, but sometimes he seems to play very well, and some other times he seems to like put up a few sacks and things like that. But that could also be, I mean, when I think about it, that could also be that first year thing he's going through. You know, that first year in the Spurs system is always the most difficult one. So he's done more than I expected that he would do at this point. So there's that.
Yeah, I have him here as a one just because, again, I think that, you know, his contract's not a lot. It's only for this year, it's $5.5 million. So next year, it's not that much as well. And then also, you know, he's doing a good job. But for a player to earn pops, you know, respect as far as becoming a starter. I mean, in year one of his team, he's already been there half the year now. He's been a starter. So I think that his 3-point shoot has improved compared to where he was with Denver and Utah from so far through this season. He's doing a great job there. And then of course on defense, you know, there's he's a decent switchy defender. So I have him as a one. I don't think, also I don't know that other teams have him ranked as high as well as their trade targets. Chimezie Metu.
Chimezie, I think that's probably a one for me, just because I feel like he's not. I think they still have him developing, and they haven't grown up on him just yet. And so I don't think that they're gonna be in a rush to move him anytime soon. Also, one more note on the Rich Forbes thing is, a lot of people ask for him to be traded, and then when you look at his contract, that the one thing I always ask is like, what exactly do you think you're gonna get in return for Bryn Forbes? At that salary, at that, you know, the contract he makes, and when you find equal value in terms of what he makes, you're really not going to get much. You're probably going to get a second rounder.
Yeah, that's the most that's I would think it, is a so. Second round pick. And then for his production, even though like a role player would not give you what Bryn gives you each night at that salary. Okay. Well, for Chimezie, I'm a one as well. I don't, you know, I just don't think other teams, you know, see him as a trade target just yet, because again, he hasn't really played. It's kind of, you know, who knows where they evaluate him. All right. Let's look at three players who are on, who next year it becomes their final year. So next season's their last season with the Spurs, and then they all become unrestricted free agents the following summer in 2021. All right. First is LaMarcus Aldridge. Where do you see him? What number do you give him? A one, two, or three?
I think. So are you saying like being traded this season,
Thursday? No, like if this player gets moved, one means you're shocked. Yeah. Like, whoa, I did not see that coming. Two means understandable. So, you give him one.
Especially after they fully guaranteed, you know, all of that salary. Yeah, I'd be shocked if he was moved.
Okay, I'm gonna cheat here. I'm moving my answer because I think you just influenced me. I'm going to a two as well. I'm going to a one as well. I had him as a two just because of the situation. Like again, like if they don't make the playoffs, you know, maybe they want to try to move him now. But again, I just don't see them moving him. I think that he's definitely become a foundational piece in terms of the way he's changed up his game, especially on offense with the threes. So I don't see them moving him at all. So I changed my answer here, even though I already had it written down.
That changed it for me too. Honestly, he did like 2 weeks ago where he started stepping back and shooting threes and helping the offense run a little more smoothly. That changed a lot.
He basically does.
I do think, however, it could be, next year could be his last year unless he takes like a big discount. Oh, okay,
yeah, with the Spurs. Like he does all the things that now like pretty comparable to what Kevin Love does on offense a little bit. But he's also, you know, he's a lot better defender, and that's what the Spurs get. And you're not going to really get that if you move LaMarcus. Rudy Gay, what do you think about him?
You know, probably a two, just because he hasn't had a great season. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I think it would be kind of hard trying to piece somebody in right now that, you know, has the experience that he has, and so that would be hard. So, you know, I'm leaning towards one a little bit, but I can see where they might do that just because he has struggled that time this year. And, yeah, I don't know if he's he has completely played himself out of favor, obviously, but you kind of wonder if, like, obviously his best peers are behind him.
Yeah, I mean, he's a little bit tougher for me to read. I picked a 2 as well. And it's not really. I think it would be more of like another team wanted him, like a playoff team. They need an extra piece who they thought could get something more, a little bit more out of Rudy. But I think he's pretty safe here with the Spurs at that $14.5 million. But for now, I give him a 2. I think that if he got moved, it would be understandable. It wouldn't be shocking to me. Patty Mills.
Yeah, I'd be shocked if he's moved.
So a 1
because I mean, yeah, definitely a 1 just because of the way he's been one of those just that consistent guys this year for the team, especially for the second unit. And he's been really important just the way he works well with other players in that second unit, especially with like Jakob. So I think he's too valuable right now.
Yeah. And, you know, I just think that I have him as 1 as well. I don't see him getting moved. And again, I think it's just more so not only because of for one, he's having a great season. He's been a huge reason why they're winning. I was looking at basketball. What is their name? That I forgot, one of the basketball analytics. No, the other one. I forgot that. B-Ball Index. There you go.
Oh, yeah.
B-BallIndex.com. And they have their player impact plus minus statistic. And Patty Mills like has like the most like player impact type wins for the Spurs this year. He was the number 1 on the team. And he's just been so good for them, not only because of statistically, but I also think that he's kind of entered that stage in his career with the Spurs and just the culture and the organization where he's almost like one of those mainstays now. Obviously not like a member of the big 3 like Manu, Timmy, and Tony, but even like somebody like a Matt Bond or like a Bruce Bowen, a Sean Elliott. Just, I mean, no, Sean, he's obviously one of the legends, sorry, not Sean Elliott, but you know, yeah, just one of those role players who's really just, you know, kind of ingrained himself with the Spurs, and you just expect him to almost finish his culture, his career here. We'll see. Obviously it's he still only has 1 more year on his deal, but again, I think he's one of those players where he's really, I just can't see them moving him at all. So I would be shocked as well if he got moved. All right, now I'm going to first just talk about one specific player, then I'm going to put the rest of these guys in a group because I just think they're pretty safe here. So let's first actually, I'll just do the whole group. So these are the young guys. This is what I have encoded as the young guys. These are the guys who are supposed to be here for the future. Lonnie Walker the 4th, Lucas Samanich, DeJounte Murray, Derek White, Keldon Johnson. I have them all as a 1. Do you agree?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah,
I think they're like pretty much all untouchable unless like a huge offer came about. Now, specifically focusing on Lonnie real quick, there was an interesting article, I think you pointed this out, by Mike Schmitz of ESPN, who's a really good writer who really does good stuff evaluating and scouting, but he had put one of the buy low targets is in the trade deadline is Lonnie Walker, and he had basically said that if there's a team who wants to trade a win now player for a young player, up and coming player, then that team should call the Spurs and try to get Lonnie Walker. For one, I just don't see anybody that's a win now player right now that's not a current all-star, you know, that teams are even trying to look to move for Lonnie. I just can't think of anyone right now that's like a win now. Like, who's that player that's really going to propel the Spurs, you know, past the Lakers or the Clippers or even like the Jazz or someone like that? I just don't see it. If there's a player out there who wants to get traded that's out on the trade block, like Kevin Love doesn't do that for me. I just don't see him like as that kind of player, or even like somebody like D'Angelo Russell. I just don't think it's worth it moving those kind of players for Lonnie. What do you think? What did you think about that article?
Yeah, I mean, it was just one of those things, you know, and I kind of joked about it or whatever, and I understand these guys sometimes have to just come up with storylines and try to find something. And anytime you're talking about trade deadline, it's a lot of speculation, right? So you have to, like, speculate. And that's kind of, you're trying to find different players that you can, like, target. So Lonnie was one of those that, obviously, you want to see him play, and he's not playing. And so that's why that came up. But, yeah, I mean, I can't see that happening. And I think the Spurs, you know, I think the reason they've been so patient with him is because they see so much in him, and they want to take their time and not rush him along. And I think they see him as definitely a future, like, maybe like cornerstone or part of that young group that's going to be really important to the team future. So I would be totally surprised.
Yeah, so same here. You know, I agree with you 100%. I just don't see any of those 5 young guys getting moved, you know, Walker, Samanich, Murray, White, or Keldon Johnson, just because, you know, those are pretty much like the staples of the Spurs organization. So Spurscast listeners, if you listen, you know, to mine and Mike's conversation, hopefully you guys were kind of playing along at home, you know, listening and trying to evaluate where you would put the prospects. Again, 1 means that they're extremely safe. You would be shocked if they got moved. 2 means understandable if they got moved. And then 3 means you expect this to happen. So Mike, both of us didn't throw out is a 3, which means that you expect a trade to happen. And that's kind of where you're at, right? A week away, you don't expect a trade to happen at all?
mid-season trade deadline is rarely. I mean, I think if you've been following the team for any length of time, you like there's no threes in there at all ever. It's like,
yeah. So you know, and I agree there too. And just because, again, you know, I know that the Spurs obviously aren't playing their best basketball. They're a below 500 team. They're six games below 500 right now. It's just the fact that they're right there still on the cusp of becoming a playoff team. All they got to do is get a win streak together. That's even tough to do, but still just get it, put a few games together and I think, and have Memphis slip up a little bit. And I think that they're right there. So I think that's the reason why, even though they're having one of their worst seasons in a long time, we still are going to have a pretty quiet trade deadline. But of course, if they make a move, you know, we'll make sure to address it here on Project Spurs. So, you know, that was just our little rundown of the trade situation coming up next week with the Spurs. Again, Mike and I expect it to be very quiet, but if a player gets moved, those are our ratings as far as, you know, were we shocked or did we kind of, was that understandable? All right, Mike, for our last part of our podcast, I do want to focus here on spending some time discussing, you know, Kobe Bryant, his legacy, the player that he was, especially, you know, you and I watching him for years as you know, Spurs fans, and then, of course, working as media. So, unfortunately, you know, as I mentioned earlier on the show, on Sunday, we got the horrific news that Kobe, his 13-year-old daughter, Gianna, and seven others were in a tragic plane, helicopter crash, should I say, and they all passed away. So, Mike, I had to really let you know ahead of time we're going to kind of go through this, some Kobe memories. So I guess I'll let you start off first. Give me some of your, you know, what do you want to say about Kobe, any memories that come to mind?
Yeah, first of all, I want to give a shout-out to John Diaz because
yes, and I was going to plug that later. His piece.
Yeah, I mean, just the words he found to me, I was just like, I mean, loved what he had to say. And it was funny because I have to write something and I've been kind of dreading it every day. I have not been able to put a single word to paper because it's kind of, and John was able to just sum up everything I thought beautifully. So make sure you check that out. But one of the great things about what we've been able to do is we've been privileged enough to really cover some great players, and Kobe was one I got to cover. I started covering the Spurs in 1999 playoffs, and that's kind of when that whole a new era of the Spurs Lakers rivalry began because of that playoff series, the Western Conference semifinals, where the Spurs swept the Lakers. So that was kind of one of my I was kind of racking my brain, and that was one of the ones because I got to kind of see up close and personal just the type of competitor he was at such a young age. And I haven't had a lot of, like, you know, I'm asking a few questions here and there, but nothing too personal. But I remember one time after the Spurs ended, the Lakers ended the Spurs, playoffs, ended their run. I remember it was in San Antonio, and I saw him, like, consoling a kid that was a Spurs fan and just telling him, like, you know, you've got a great team and don't be sad. And I was just like, that was kind of the one that kind of, like, I was like, wow, there's, like, a lot more to him. And he had to grow up so fast, you know, coming in from high school, and for him to have that kind of, I guess, awareness, you know, to reach out to a kid and to, you know, show that, I guess, race or whatever was awesome. So that's got to rank up there definitely as one of my favorites.
Yeah, no, for sure. Especially like you, that you got, you know, you got to cover him so early on, you know, back in 1999 when his career was first starting out there. So one of mine, it's not really like a game or anything. It's more like just like the kind of influence he had on me as a not only just a basketball fan, but also, you know, I never played like in college or anything, or, you know, got high in basketball in terms of playing, you know, going far, you know, just your average person, you know, who likes to play pickup ball. But he was a huge influence on me, and just my passion and my drive for wanting to play basketball all the time with my friends at different kind of leagues and stuff. And I just remember in college, you know, I went to college from 2004 to 2008, and that's kind of when YouTube was like barely coming out and stuff. And I just remember that's when Kobe was entering those years where he was going to be without Shaq, where he could really just take over and kind of go for this, you know, becoming like a huge, like an insane scorer and putting up those 30 plus point nights. And I, you know, those seasons, I would just, before class, you know, in college, I would, bust on my laptop, I put on YouTube, and I start watching all of his highlights of his games, his shots. I mean, it was just insane the amount of time that I would just watch him. I just remember watching that 81-point game, the 60-point games. I mean, it was just nuts, like, how much I just constantly watched him in those years from 2004 to 2008 when I was in college. And then I'd get all amped up because I'd watch him before class, and then after class, and I'd go to the rec where we had at my college, and I'd go play ball. And if we weren't playing five, you know, pick up 5-on-5, I would also I would just go shoot. And back then, I actually enjoyed, like, you know, that 1-on-1 Kobe slash Jordan type game where, like, you're doing fadeaways and you're practicing your 1-on-1 type moves, and you're like, yeah. And I remember I used to try to, like, do the kick out jumper, like how he had, like, his leg kind of extended. You know, now today I'm more like I like to, like, watch, like, the Klay Thompson, Ray Allen type players. But still, back early on, that was, like, the kind of basketball I really, really liked. And it's obviously a huge transformation from where I'm at today, where I'm more analytically like the game with threes and all that stuff. But still, I mean, he was just a huge influence on me. What else did I say here? Yeah, if I don't know if Mike you remember this, but when I first got on Twitter, I didn't used to be called, you know, Paul Garcia NBA. It was called 24 Rider.
Yep.
And not only in Twitter, but all my online accounts, I even had T-shirts like with the number 24, and I used to get it embroidered in my hats. And I didn't come out and say that to people, but the reason why I had 24 Rider was because 24 was because of Kobe. He was my favorite player. I just love that number. I would get it put on clothing and, like I said, items. I would always have that number in some sort of affiliation with myself because of Kobe. Now, it was hard to tell Spurs fans that because early on, you know, of course, I was, when Twitter first came out, I was a Spurs fan, so I don't want to be out here just being a Kobe homer, you know, in front of everyone. So that's I kind of hit it, is I would just be 24 Rider. Some people would ask me, you know, why do you have that 24? And I would just say it's Kobe. Kobe's my favorite player. But I didn't want to say that out loud because, you know, everybody thought, you know, maybe Manu or Timmy would be my favorite player. But it was actually Kobe for a very long time. And then also, what else was I going to say here? Yeah. And so, and then of course, when I got into the media, I had kind of moved away from that, went to my general name. So I mean, he was a huge influence on me. Like I mentioned, he was one of my idols in basketball. And just, you know, just again, like watching his videos nonstop for years of his play and his game. And then, Mike, I do want to thank you, man, because, like, you gave me a huge chance and opportunity by letting me become a media member and letting me, you know, get credentialed and working at games, because two of my goals, like, I got to cross off my list, you know, is one was I always wanted to ask Kobe a question. And 1 year I did get to ask him when he was still playing. And I still have that on one of my old phones. It's buried in my closet somewhere, but I want to save that for, like, my future kids one day. I want to tell them, like, I got to interview this dude. This dude was here. And then not only that, you know, I got to cover his last few seasons before he retired. And the most memorable one, of course, is that day of 2016 when you know, it was just like, that day was tough to watch because it was just like, man, it's like, this dude's about to hang it up. Like, it's almost over. Like, he's almost there at the finish line. And just the way he spoke about it, he was so professional. You know, the Spurs did a great job too of, like, giving him that last video in the press conference, you know, his comments to Spurs fans. It was just unbelievable. And like I said, like, I want to thank you there for, like, giving me one of my wishes of, like, getting to see one of my heroes and not my heroes, you know, one of my idols in basketball. And that's always been, like, a thing that I've always, like, just will always be grateful that I got to, you know, cover him as a media member. Of course, as a fan, you know, I remember there was games where my parents would give me tickets to go, or my friends would give me tickets, and we go and, you know, see Kobe. And of course, he would rip the Spurs hearts out of most nights. But I mean, he was just a huge influence on me. It's just terrible that we have to discuss this so early in his life. But he was only 41 years old, and of course, his daughter was only 13.
Yeah, it's younger than me, which is
And then just crazy. The other victims too on the crash. You know, his daughter was 13. There was another kid on there, or two kids, and then the parents, of course, and the pilot. It was just an awful situation. And I'm really, you know, this is why I really love basketball over any other sport, more than football, baseball, just anything, because, you know, you see the NBA community come together, whether it's the fans, the players, the coaches. I mean, it's just been like a huge, like, you know, family gathering for all of us. You know, it affects us all right now. And I mean, it's just, you know, it's just, shoot, I got to wrap this up before I start crying. So let's go ahead. And did you want to say anything else about Kobe before we end this one?
Yeah, I mean, it's sad, but what I've loved seeing is that it's also been a celebration of his life. And it more than just his as a player is what I've liked seeing. And that's really cool. The whole 24 editing, I didn't know until you just said it right now.
Bro, yeah.
When I first saw that, I thought that was your age.
Oh, wow.
I was like, oh, yeah. Maybe he's 24. That's just what I assumed. So, I mean, anyway, that's awesome. Not only that, but it's funny how you say what he did for you. But I think he's responsible for, like, or he's the reason why a current, like, generation of NBA players even picked up a ball to begin with. And I don't think we would have seen a lot of the players that we see now without him, you know, you know, being a part of that. So it's a huge impact.
I think DeMar actually had that quote. I think he said, without Kobe, there's no me. Like, he kind of said that, right? Like, I think he had a very quote very similar to that. Yeah, I mean, you're right. I mean, it's just huge. I mean, just the kind of impact he had on everyone. And you see that with the NBA community. And just like, even like, just like, not even NBA, like that day that it happened, you know, you see national news on CNN, MSNBC, they were just constantly talking about Kobe. It was so great. You know, I mean, now obviously it's not great because it was a tragedy, but, you know, just the fact that he's still like, you just see how every single part of the world was just affected by his loss. So, you know, obviously, you know, it's going to be tough, you know, to kind of get back to normalcy of the NBA, but the players, you know, the fans, we all have to just go on and obviously we'll continue to celebrate his life. And I like seeing these different reports that players are giving up their jersey, number 8 and 24, a lot of different players. And who knows, maybe the league will one day, you know, retire that number where nobody ever wears it. We'll see what happens. And it's obviously going to be hard watching the Hall of Fame speech with Timmy, and then Kobe's not going to be there, and he should have been there with him and Kevin Garnett. So, you know, we're going to continue to celebrate Kobe, and, you know, he was obviously a huge influence on all of our lives. All right, Mike, let's go ahead and close out this episode. So before I close out this episode, I want to remind you all to visit ProjectSpurs.com. Benjamin Bornstein's latest prospect watch is over Aaron Nesmith of Vanderbilt. Steven Anderson continues to keep you updated after each game with his analysis. Like Mike mentioned here, John Diaz, we really, really ask you to go read his latest column, excellent column called In Memoriam of NBA Legend Kobe Bryant. Mike's right. I mean, I was thinking about writing something about Kobe, but once I read John's, I was like, no, I ain't going to touch that. He just did a great job. And I just think that you're right, Mike, it's hard to write about Kobe, and John just did it perfectly. And it's not even that many words. It's kind of short, but just hits right to the point. It's really powerful. My latest piece, Spurscast listeners, if you want to know more about Damari Carroll and the Spurs' options with him, I wrote a piece over the weekend. So that's over on ProjectSpurs.com as well. And as always, sign up to become a Project Spurs premium member so you can get access to our different databases that are updated after each Spurs game. This episode was written and recorded by me, Paul Garcia. As always, thank you to Mike for mixing and producing this episode. Since the NBA trade deadline will take place next week, next Thursday, we'll be releasing a Spurscast after the trade deadline. So in the event that the Spurs do make a trade, we'll make sure to cover it in detail after that trade deadline passes. So for Michael DeLeon, I am Paul Garcia. Thank you and have a great day.